It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm John Munson. As our state capitol report continues, we talk about the fact that Scott Walker says he'll work with lawmakers to slow chronic wasting disease. Last week, legislators voted against a rule to restrict hunters from moving deer carcasses out of some counties. Are you glad the legislative committee didn't support a rule that restricts movement of deer carcasses from CWD-affected counties? Why or why not? 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, ideas@WPR.org, or you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Rich Kramer is a Wisconsin Public Radio reporter based in Eau Claire and host of The West Side with Rich Kramer. He's been following the story for WPR. Rich, thanks for joining us.
Good to be here. Thanks for having me.
Earlier this year, Governor Walker called on two state agencies to come up with emergency rules to combat chronic wasting disease. What came out of that?
All right. So in May, the governor basically ordered directives to the Department of Natural Resources and the Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection, also known as DADCAP, to come up with rules aimed at dealing with CWD. It's the first major action that the state had seen for some time on CWD. So DADCAP, since they regulate deer farms, they were charged with kind of looking into requiring additional fencing. So it could be in a second 8-foot tall wire fence that some deer farms already have, or at the minimum, it would be electrical fence. The DNR was at first going to look at just the banning hunters from removing deer carcasses that they shot in counties that have CWD or that are nearby CWD positives. So the idea is that, you know, the old days when you'd see a deer on the hood of the truck or on the car rolling down the road, they want those animals, the spinal column and the brains and everything, to stay where the hunter shot them. So the idea was that the hunter would debone the deer and just bring the meat home and leave the carcass there. But it was interesting how it all played out. The citizen-led advisory boards for, or the citizen-led boards for the DADCAP, the Department of Agriculture, basically voted to do nothing. And then the DNR board took up the fencing issue as well.
Well, the fencing issue isn't anything new. I mean, there have been people who've been calling for better fencing around deer farms for a number of years.
Right.
The owners of the deer farms saying it's a waste of money and they can't afford it anyway. So that wasn't anything new. Let's talk about the restriction that would have prevented hunters from moving deer out of the areas of the state affected by CWD. That proposal rejected by the legislature, who killed the rule. What happened here, and what was the opposition about?
So the opposition was about the use of the emergency rule. At least that's what folks have said. You know, the emergency rules for DADCAP, DNR, whatever, it's meant to address a new, really threatening kind of a outbreak. So think of things like swine flu or bird flu. The emergency rule is meant so that agencies can take big action really quickly. The argument was that CWD has been around, you know, for a long time, 15, 18 years. So some felt that the emergency rule wasn't the proper way to go through with this. Some wanted this rule on hunters and the rule on fencing to go through either the regular rulemaking process, which can take a couple of years, or else through legislation. But instead, the governor chose to use the emergency rule process. The DNR basically wrote up a rule and passed it, the Natural Resources Board. So then Steve Noss, who's a Republican state senator out of Whitewater, he is a co-chair of this committee that gives final approval to administrative rules. So he basically announced his intention to kill part or all of this bill. And then on Monday, last Monday, they held it was like an 8 or a 10 hour hearing, public hearing, and then they voted. They had the votes to kill the emergency rule on the hunter carcass transport. The argument was that hunters would be confused, that this rule was going too quickly. But they, I was surprised to see that they kept the rules on fencing. So that's where we're at right now.
Well, Rich, hang on. We have a caller, Dwayne, who I think has wants to weigh in on this. He's calling us from Hayward. Let's take Dwayne's call now. Dwayne, welcome to the morning show.
Yeah, this rule is all intensive and all inclusive and doesn't have any common sense into it. I have friends that hunt on farms that the county line runs through the middle of the farm. So they would be breaking you off. They shot a deer on one part of the farm and took it home to process on another part of the farm. It'd be more like something, well, if you're 5 miles from the line, you can't move it or something like that, because it's just all-inclusive. You shall not do this. It's just crazy, because deer run across county lines all the time when you're close to them.
Dwayne, thanks for that call. What about it? I mean, how were they going to determine what the boundaries were for an area that is, you know, how you define an area affected by CWD and put that on a map?
Right. Even that is a bit confusing for people who don't, you know, follow it constantly, like us reporters or some lawmakers or whatever. But so if a county has they find a positive for CWD, there was one in Eau Claire County, for example, then the DNR looks at that, so that Eau Claire County would be CWD affected. But also, any county within 10-mile circle of that is also considered CWD affected, because deer do tend to move a bit. And that's where some of the confusion would have been. I mean, the hunters would have really had to have looked at the latest CWD maps to see where. There's 55 counties that are listed as CWD affected. So there definitely could have been some real confusion. And also, because the rule was set to go into effect immediately for this year's hunting seasons, the question was, well, are the DNR wardens going to start issuing, you know, citations? Because there's a learning period, you know. So it was unclear whether or not they were going to strictly enforce that or not, but nonetheless, the rule is gone. So for this hunting season, at least, it's not in effect.
Rich Kramer is a WPR reporter based in Eau Claire. He's been following the CWD story for Wisconsin Public Radio. We're wondering what you think should be done about chronic wasting disease, and what you thought of the governor's proposed emergency rule, perhaps also the rules about fencing for deer farms. 800-642-1234. The governor says he'll work with the legislature to reintroduce his emergency rule. Do we have any idea what will be different this time around?
I asked him that about 2 days just after the board voted to kill his part of his rule, and he said he was going to work with the legislature on that and in reintroducing it. He didn't say. I tried to get him to specify whether that would be through the normal rulemaking process or through legislation. He just said that, you know, he would work with lawmakers and reintroduce it. During the hearing on these rules, a lot of the people that were for the carcass transport ban, and also for the CWD or for the fencing ban requirements, they were saying, if we don't act now, it's not going to happen. We've seen this come up politically before, and then when people say they're going to address it in the next session, it never happens. So that's part of the justification of folks that wanted to see these emergency rules in effect instantly.
Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, a rule that did go through, the deer fencing requirement, where are we on that?
Well, that is an interesting one, too, because the fencing requirement rule, once it goes into effect, the deer farms that have had CWD positives, you know, they're required already to have double fencing. But this one would require enhanced fencing in any county that is listed as CWD affected. So that rule will go into effect. They've got 365 days to comply with the rule, but because it's an emergency rule, the rules, I'm saying rules a lot, the emergency rules are only on the books for 150 days or so. There's possibility for extension. So the question is whether or not this emergency rule goes away before these deer farms or hunting ranches even have to come into compliance.
Hmm. So, meanwhile, more than, sounds like about three quarters of the counties in Wisconsin affected by CWD. How are people reacting to what's transpired regarding these rules? And I imagine the most of the reaction would be within the hunting community and those who follow this issue closely.
It's interesting. You've got some people who are very concerned about CWD decimating the deer herd, and then you've got other hunting groups that and groups of people that point to southern Wisconsin that had this, you know, they've got huge amounts of CWD down there, but yet they point out that the deer herd is actually increased. That is a complicated situation because now there's county deer advisory councils that committees that vote to grow the herd or reduce the herd, so there's some human factor in there as well. Mm-hmm. But it's just such a polarizing issue, and you know, back in the early 2000s when it first broke out, there was huge reaction, and lately it seems like a lot of people don't seem as worried about it.
Well, and deer hunting, a major piece of Wisconsin's, the traditions in the state, as well as being a pretty sizable amount of money that's spent on it, a lot of people involved in it, and certainly has been a big issue in the legislature, at least in terms of what people are likely to say about it. Mm-hmm. And I know, Rich, that you'll be following this story very quickly here. What do you think will happen next? Nothing's going to happen before the election, right?
Nothing before the election. And what will be interesting is whether or not this carcass transport ban is introduced next year.
Okay. Rich Kramer stays with us. He's our Wisconsin Public Radio reporter based in Eau Claire. When we come back, we'll talk about frac sand mining. I'm John Munson. This is the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm John Munson. We'll shift our focus now to another topic that WPR's Western Bureau reporter Rich Kramer, based in Eau Claire, has been following, and that is frac sand mining. We've heard in recent months that there's once again a big demand for frac sand, and yet, as you report, some Wisconsin mines are shutting down and workers are being laid off. What's going on?
It's an interesting situation. Right now, it's predicted that by the end of this year, the national demand for frac sand, that is sand that's used to in the hydraulic fracturing of shale deposits to get at the oil and natural gas, that demand is expected to hit more than 100 million tons, which is bar none a record for the U.S. But at the same time, where that sand is coming from has changed. So Wisconsin mines are getting shut out a bit because over the last year and a half, there have been 15 new mines that have opened up, big sand mines in Texas. And why that matters is right now, more than half of the drilling activity for oil and natural gas is happening in what's called the Permian Basin, which is in western Texas into New Mexico. It's just the busiest oil fields in the nation. So since these local sand mines have sprung up within trucking distance, those drillers down there can use that local sand, and they found out that it works pretty well. They can use it at a fraction of the cost of shipping it across the country from Wisconsin, even though Wisconsin sand, called Northern White, is prized for its roundness and hardness. It's considered the best, but it's a lot of money to ship it across the country by rail.
So frac sand, Texas Oil Company is using locally generated comparatively locally generated sand from Texas. That's appealing to them. So what are mine operators and frac sand companies doing about the closures? Is there another market for Wisconsin's frac sand?
There is. There's drilling still happening in the Bakken, which is North Dakota, into Montana. There's oil fields and natural gas fields in places like New York, Pennsylvania, up in Western Canada, Utah, there's the Colorado. So there's a lot of other places for Wisconsin to sell its sand. So I talked last week with a CEO for Superior Silica Sands. His name is Rick Shearer. And he said right now they are working as hard as they can to develop new customer base in those other oil fields. But that takes time, he said. And in the meantime, they've had to slow production because this local sand in Texas has displaced Wisconsin sand so much that even though demand is through the roof, it's not demand for our sand. So in the meantime, Rick Shearer told me that while they develop these markets, in the meantime, they have to ramp down production. Superior Silica Sand laid off 20 people. And there's another sand mine in Whitehall that shut down part of its operations and laid off 37. So do
we know where they're looking for new customers? We had a guest on this very show not too long ago who said that that sand is now an international market, and there's kind of an international shortage of the kind of sand that is important to frac sand mining. Are we looking at shipping sand overseas potentially?
That I'm not sure of. I do know that the Canadian oil field or Canadian oil companies are using it quite a bit, and that's one of the better for Wisconsin sands. It's all about transportation, so the further it gets, the more it costs. And when you tack on, you know, overseas shipping, I can only imagine what it costs. But I have not heard that. I've just heard that. They're just looking out to basically everywhere in the U.S. except for Texas and into Canada a little bit, too.
So the job losses in Wisconsin, as production is slowing down, as we've noted, how many jobs are we talking about here?
So far, I only know about 50. There's probably more than that, but it's tough unless you're able to get on the phone with every CEO for every company, which is unlikely. It's hard to know. And if they lay off a large enough number, then Department of Workforce Development sends out what's called a mass layoff notice. That's kind of the only chance that a person has to really find out what's going on, unless you've got, you know, close contacts in every company, which I'm working on at this point.
So what do we know about the economic impact, the secondary economic impact from frac sand mining? Some people say, hey, there's a really huge impact in local businesses and so forth. Others saying they haven't seen the kind of economic impact that they thought they would get. Where are we on this? What do you know?
Well, I know that it definitely, you know, if you go to a place like Whitehall and there's 30 some employees that lose their job, that's going to sting because those people, there's just not a lot of economic activity going on in that area. So it doesn't help, but again, it's hard to know because when the sand mines were popping up and really expanding in Wisconsin back in 2011, 2012, 2013, we'd see these economic, there would be these reports done to predict what the economic impact would be, and it would be thousands of jobs and just tremendous spillover. So we haven't necessarily seen that, but it's definitely, like, these companies use a lot of materials. They use a lot of metal. They have contractors for electrical. And, I mean, they definitely do help the local economy. But to what extent, I don't have a dollar figure for you.
Okay. And, of course, you've got trucking and all sorts of other things.
A lot of supportive industries that rely on it. That's for sure.
Rich, do you think, could we get to a point where Texas sand becomes so readily available and so cheap that Wisconsin's frac sand industry just completely goes under?
I don't think so. It's just going through a transformation right now. So in Texas, even though the local sand is much more attractive to energy companies that are drilling there, Wisconsin sand is still making it in. So think of when they pump down these mixtures of sand and chemicals and to fracture the rock, they experiment with different technologies, different approaches. So They might use this really fine sand from Texas and then add a little bit of more coarse sand from Wisconsin, like a kind of mixing up a cocktail and injecting it into the shale deposits. So there is still some Wisconsin sand being used down there. And certainly their oil drilling is going to continue as long as oil prices are favorable in places like Colorado, North Dakota, you know, Marcellus over in New York, Pennsylvania. So there's activity. But right now, natural gas prices have been fairly flat. And the oil prices, you know, the sand mining industry in Wisconsin was born and really grew up while oil prices were like $100 a barrel. So we're not there yet.
But we're getting close.
We're getting close. So if we get up to $100 a barrel, you can expect everybody all around the country to go nuts with drilling. So then, you know, we might see it's a Wisconsin sand mining industry is a cyclical industry chasing another cyclical industry. So the effects that happen in the oil fields don't really reach Wisconsin for some time. So we've got kind of a delayed reaction. And right now, in general, it seems to be that the oil industry and the sand mining industry is kind of going into another dip. That's what the analysts seem to think is happening.
So what you're describing is sort of a roller coaster effect up and down, makes it kind of tough on local communities where these businesses are kind of counted on to provide economic support to make any long-range plans for their local businesses. What else are you going to be watching for as we move forward here to kind of figure out where things are heading?
Well, I'm going to be watching very closely to see what other sand mines might be shutting down in the short term. But in the long term, I'm also hearing that just because of the nature of how things have changed with regard to the Permian Basin using the local sand, I'm expecting, the analysts expect to see a lot of acquisitions happening. So smaller companies that popped up when things were good in Wisconsin that rely on trucking to get sand from a mine to a processing facility, those are the types of facilities that are just not going to make it. So I'm expecting to see a lot of the bigger companies, the High Crushes, the Covias and the Superior Silica Sands buying up these other mines and trying to work them into their operations.
All right. Thank you very much, Rich Kramer. I really appreciate your time this morning.
Thank you.
Rich Kramer is a WPR reporter based in Eau Claire. I'm John Munson. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.